Well, good morning and welcome to iLife. iLife is a series of talks that we have here at Trinity Church where we seek to bring understanding from the historic Christian faith and the wisdom and resources that the faith offers into the places in our culture that there might be confusion or hurt. And so today we have the opportunity to hear about depression from Dr. John Cox. John received his undergraduate from the University of Mississippi, a master's in marriage and family therapy from Reformed Theological Seminary, and a doctorate from Rosemead School of Psychology in Los Angeles. He's a clinical psychologist at Live Oak Psychological Associates in Jackson, where he's been practicing for 28 years. His website, which was cut off from the handout that you have on your desk, on your table, is johncoxpsychology.com. If you don't know how to spell that, there's some Mississippi State people around the room who can help you. Just look for them. And all right. So, John, more importantly, John is he's a deacon emeritus at First Presbyterian Church. He is married to Norma for 34 years, three daughters, age 30, 27, and 25. And one grandson, double exclamation point. So we are thrilled to have John, who's a friend of so many in this congregation and a gifted and trained and experienced man in these things. And so, John, come on up and be our teacher.
I'm glad to be with y'all. That phone number, I want to save some time for Q&A because I'm going to be talking conceptually about depression, but I want you to be able to ask me questions. Just in case you wanted to ask a question privately, that's like a Google Voice number. It'll text me. But I would rather you interact with me, like hold your hand up questions, which we'll do in a little bit. I am delighted to be here with y'all. Claude and I go back way long time. He and my brother were dear friends. My brother died 28 years ago almost, and he and Claude were just blood brothers, so that tied me and Claude together even more so. Claude's dad used to teach my Sunday school. We have fun connections, so I'm glad to be here with y'all. And I'm really glad to be talking about a topic, even though it's not a joyful one, depression. Some real kudos go out to your leadership for actually doing that, you know, doing what most churches don't do, and that is talk about the hard stuff. So we got a lot to cover, so let's ride. I have three things I want to talk about this morning. I want to talk about how it is that Christians can get depressed in the first place. You know, I mean, you're faithfully walking with Christ and you're still so deeply hurting. How is that possible? People think maybe I'm not trusting God enough, whatever. So a question I hear a lot in my office and in the conferences I do. Secondly, I want to talk about depression itself, of course. How does it work? Like, I want to demystify it some. What goes on in us? What goes on in humans to take them to such a dark place? I want you to leave here with some understanding of that. Thirdly, I want to talk about how we, as Christian communities, can be growing better to be more life-giving places for each other as we encounter struggle, as we encounter pain. What does it look like for us to be communities that are more life-giving? All right? So, let's put the spurs to it. Forgive me, this is going to be broad strokes on a very nuanced topic, but I want to give you the broad picture, and I want to save time for the Q&A, because that's when we'll get some real meat on the bones. So, number one, how is it that, you know, good Christians get depressed? I mean, Christ comes with the best news in the world. You know, you are forgiven, you are one with Him, you are adopted by Him, as Claude has been preaching you. So what do you have to be depressed about, right? I mean, if you're still depressed knowing that, wouldn't that mean there's some fault in your faith or that you aren't really clinging to the promises of Christ? Well, the answer is no. Actually, my office is filled with committed Christians who still struggle with anxiety or depression or symptoms, addictions, destructive behaviors, even suicidal feelings. So how do we explain that? There are a ton of reasons. I'm going to give you two biggies. Number one, Christian, who lives in Christ. Your faith does not begin in the New Testament, right? Your faith begins in Genesis. In other words, despite the fact that we live under the cross, we still live in a world that God said died. We sinned, we fell, and the world fell with us. So first sort of easy answer to this question of how is it that we can still be in pain is, regardless of your faith, you still live in a world that hurts. It's alienated and it's broken and it's fallen and it's full of death. And even though God can do anything, He cannot go back on His word and make that which is fallen not fallen. The day you eat of it, you will surely die, you and the world around you. That is a promise, okay? And this is where you now live, Christian or non-Christian, and it still hurts, all right? My dad and I were talking the other day about my brother, and he was telling me he was talking to a man who had also lost a son. And he said the guy said to him, "Bill, we belong to a club that nobody wants to be a member of." Well, my friends, we all do, don't we? We have divorces and heartbreaking children and illnesses and depression. And that's our norm now, okay? Now, pain itself is not the same as depression, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But if we aren't really careful about how we manage our pain, it can get symptomatic jiffy quick, one of those symptoms being depression. All right. By the way, this is another show, but that same pain might trip someone else into anxiety attacks or compulsive behaviors or anger problems. Okay. When it comes to actual symptoms, it's pick a card, any card. All right. We can talk about that some other time. Our topic is depression. But with me so far, pain is our norm. Christian or non-Christian, we sometimes act surprised that it's still the case, even if you are being faithful. Now, explanation number two, how come you can be a Christian and still hurt? Well, that fallen world I'm talking about, that fallen world leaves a mark. And it leaves a mark not only in your world, but in your heart, in your character, in your soul. In other words, because of all that fallenness, because of all that brokenness, because of wounded relationships and broken families and fallen parents and fallen life, we now live not only with a fallen world, but with kooky software, kooky distortions and wounds and injuries and deficits in our inside grid for how we make sense of relationships and love and emotions and how they work. All right. And that can so set us up to get depressed. Let me give you some examples of what I'm talking about and see if it makes sense. Some people learn, kind of at a core level, at a gut level, at a relational level, that it's not safe to feel vulnerable feelings. Man, if you feel sadness or hurt or vulnerability, suck it up. Come on. You know, not okay to do that. Act tough. Don't have vulnerable feelings. Push them away. There was a guy I was talking to at a marriage conference I did 2 weeks ago, and he said, "Yeah, when I start to feel sad, I just, like, make it go away." All right? Now, presto, instant depression. Okay, now he learned that strategy, that belief, that way of organizing and managing his internal world in this broken, fallen place. Let me give you another example. Some people learn that if you fail, it's humiliating. All right, successful people don't fail. Loved people don't fail. You need to be 10 feet tall, good looking, and bulletproof to be loved. All right? So they're driven, and they drive you with a No Cry Babies bumper sticker, all right? Total internal setup for depression, all right? People say, "My life is great. What do I have to be depressed about?" Well, here's why. Because so many of us, all of us actually, are living our lives with some distorted rules or wounds or software that we carry inside, all right? All right, one more example. There's 1,000 examples, all right? But some people learn core gut level that it's not okay to say no to anybody in a relationship, all right? In other words, you just keep other people happy. You don't matter. Give till you die, all right? And these people kind of live lives controlled by what other people think. These are kind of the chameleons, the people pleasers. And that will leave you alone and empty. Presto. You're set up for symptoms again. All right? Now, these problems are not the broken world. These problems are broken software, broken categories, broken hearts that we are taught by the broken world. Get it? Okay? So, now, stay with me. You become a Christian. And what do you call someone who has kooky distortions and wounds and inabilities in their hearts who becomes a Christian? You call them a Christian who has kooky wounds and inabilities and struggles in their hearts, okay? In other words, we take our fallen software into our Christian life. And if we're not managing our emotions and our relationships and our injuries really carefully, that software, that grid, will kick us over into symptoms so quick, one of which is depression. So, Christians still get symptoms, sometimes depression. We've got character software that's broken, and we live in a broken world. How would you not struggle, okay? By the way, that's what therapy does. Good therapy changes that software. It changes that grid for how I make sense of emotions and relationships. Good therapy is not like giving you advice about what you should do. It's changing that internal heart sense. You know that sense of, I know this, but I don't feel it in my heart? That's kind of what that software is, all right? Now, part two, main attraction. Let's talk about depression. How does it work from a spiritual, emotional perspective? I'm not going to talk much about the physical, chemical, genetic whole thing. Our culture talks about that way too much, okay? It's somewhat valid. I don't want to go there that much. What I want to talk about is the literal spiritual, emotional mechanism for how depression works. What gets us depressed? Number one, though, couple of what is depression not, all right? Number one, depression is not the same as sadness or being in pain, all right? People always say, oh, well, that's depressing. Or they go, well, of course he's depressed. He lost his job. Actually, that's inaccurate, all right? Being in pain or being sad is not the same as being depressed, okay? And actually, it's very possible to encounter real pain and real suffering in your life and not get depressed, okay? If you've been left by someone or betrayed by someone or hurt by someone or taken from by illness, death, whatever, what you feel is pain, all right? Hurt, sorrow, rejection, loss. And as we said, suffering's part of this world now. But if we're awake, if we're living awake, if you're living not running to hide, if you're not living running to ways to make yourself feel invulnerable. By the way, most destructive behaviors, be they overeating or anger outbursts or inappropriate sexuality or self-righteousness, pick your inappropriateness, are usually ways in which we are trying to hide from real pain, from our vulnerability, okay? But if you live awake, you will hurt. If you live with eyes open, you will encounter pain. And God created us to need the arms and the eyes and the hearts of other people to survive and metabolize that. And one of the tools He gives us to make sense of our pain is sadness. Now, let's talk about sadness for a minute, because we don't talk about it enough, despite the fact that the Bible talks about it constantly. Go figure. What is sadness? Technically, sadness is what God created humans to feel when we engage our losses. Okay? It's a healthy response. If you live awake in this world, you will feel sad a lot. If you live not trying to take or control or envy, if you live waiting upon the Lord, if you allow yourself to love, you will feel sad. And that's a good thing. Let me tell you why. Because sadness is a unique emotion. Sadness is what I call a progressive emotion. Sadness is a healing emotion. In other words, you can feel anxious forever. You can feel angry forever. You can feel depressed forever. All right? But if you encounter a loss and you feel sadness, maybe your spouse is not what you wish and you quit trying to control them into it. Or maybe you give up that sin that's so fun that makes you feel so good. Or maybe you're encountering the death of someone you love. You're going to feel sad. But then, sadness will begin doing this work I do not understand. And you will move into the process of grief. And especially if you have someone with you, the term grieving alone is almost an oxymoron. It really helps to have somebody with you. That's why you have tear ducts in your eyes. Hello. If you engage in real sadness, you will start to grieve. And the sharpness of that loss will start to diminish. I don't know how. And the depth of that pain will start to soften. I don't know how. And we heal. You hear me keep talking about my brother and his death 28 years ago. Well, let me ask you a question. If it was 28 years ago right now, I wouldn't be able to talk about him, right? Why am I able to now? It's because grief has done that work. Do I still love him? Yeah. Do I still miss him? Yeah. What's different? That sorrow, that agony has softened. When I think about him now, I feel that soft, dear, loving pain, not that horrifying loss. Sadness does that. It changes us. It literally moves us. It's a progressive emotion. We don't talk about this enough. This is why the Bible does talk about it all the time. Because grief and sadness are emotional tools that God gives us to heal and metabolize the pain of this fallen world. It also helps us let go of the things that keep us from Him. If you are obedient, you will feel sad. If you are really, really, really obedient, you might even be called a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. Are you with me? That's a whole talk in itself. So people say he's sad and depressed. Actually, that's impossible. All right. Sadness is the opposite of depression. Sadness is what I feel if I genuinely grieve and engage my losses, which we should do more of. Depression comes if I don't or can't engage my losses with sadness. Get it? So sadness, good. Depression, bad. With me? All right. That's for the Mississippi State people. Yeah. All right. So sadness is not depression is not the same as sadness. Secondly, depression is not the same as being negative. All right. You know those people who are always complaining and miserable and never do anything about it. You know the Debbie Downers. So like, well, there's no use in asking them. They'll just say no. They always do. You know those people, right? Now those people aren't depressed. All right. Actually, they're passive aggressively angry, if you want to get technical. All right. And they actually need more limits and truth brought to them. All right. I like to say to these kind of passive aggressive whiner types, like, wow, God, that really does sound bad. What can I give you to help you get yourself out of this awful place? Implication being, or you just want to moan about it, you know, right? So it's okay, in other words, for you to feel like you've got nothing left to give to your negative old Aunt Matilda, all right? She and you might need some limits set, okay, some real challenge to them. Whereas depressed people need real tenderness and love. How do you tell the difference? Easy. You can always pick them out by how they act when you don't or can't give to them. In other words, a humble, depressed person, if you can't give to them, is going to go, oh, man, I totally get it. Thank you so much for all you have given me. The pathological Eeyore over here is going to get angry and guilting. They're going to go, oh, well, I'm sure you do have more important things to do than me. Just don't forget about me over here by myself. You know, you hear the anger in that? That's not depression. That's victimhood, all right? And that's surely another show, right? So victimhood is feeling sorry for myself. Sadness is feeling sorrow for myself, right? All right, so that's what depression is not. Let's talk about what depression is. Biggest picture, depression is almost always about some kind of disconnection, all right? In other words, depression tends to happen when we encounter some aspect of our lives or some aspect of ourselves, or some aspect of our hearts emotionally that feels so painful or so unacceptable or so frightening that our hearts just disconnect from it in some way. Okay? In other words, I encounter a loss and it hurts so bad to feel it, or I encounter a failure or a pain or a rejection or a shame, and it's too much. And literally, breaker switch goes off. All right? Something in me shuts down. Something in me pushes it away. I'm not that person. I'm not going to feel that. Boom. All right? In other words, our hearts have a breaker switch, like our houses. Okay? And sometimes it can just blow. And sometimes that can be real abrupt. I can just disconnect. Or sometimes it could be more gradual. Like if you've been living in chronic pain, ongoing suffering, it doesn't go away. When is the nightmare going to end? Sometimes your heart can literally just fatigue and just collapse, okay, and the breaker gets thrown. The chemical issue can certainly be an issue at this point. Feeling chronic pain and sorrow or hurt burns serotonin like a 68 Camaro, and you can run out of gas and, you know, you're shut down real quick, all right? Now, if you think about it, there's a sense in which this whole cutoff thing is a pretty cool solution. I mean, you have a problem, you have emotion, feels too big to handle, so you reach out and throw the breaker switch. We're all good, right? High five. Well, the only problem is this. Our hearts aren't like our houses. They don't have like a big breaker box with a lot of switches in it. Your heart only has one switch. And when you throw the switch to the hurting part of you, what accidentally happens with depression is that you also throw the breaker switch to all of you. And all of you shuts down, and all of you goes dark, and all of your emotions go offline, and that is depression. Okay? In other words, the resulting feeling of shutting off parts of us like that is that we only feel one thing, and that is the emptiness and darkness we call depression. So here's the dilemma for anyone who's depressed, and we don't always know that we have this dilemma when we have it, but we have it, all right? Number one, I can open my heart back up, okay? I can cut the breakers back on and face what I cut off, which feels like it's going to kill me. So I'm probably not really likely to choose that option, all right? So option number two is I just keep it disconnected and I will stay depressed. Can you see how people can get into real despair? This is how people can get suicidal. Rob did a beautiful thing on suicide last week, I think it was. This is how we get there, because of this level of stuckness, all right? So, super stuck. What can trigger us into this? What can throw us into that much pain? Sometimes it's circumstantial, as we said. I am astonished. People say, I don't know how you do what you do every day. There's a sense in which they're right. I'm astonished at the level of pain that we live with. I'm astonished at the tragedy in our lives. I'm astonished at the level of sorrow or loneliness that we all carry. One thing that's interesting about my job is people I run across or know, they come to my office and they tell me their heart, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I thought you were fine. I thought I was the only one who struggled. And I see face after face after face of people struggling, weak, hurt, and that circumstantial pain, if we're not very careful about how we manage it in our hearts and in the presence of other people, it can get intolerable, and boom, we disconnect it. Another thing I often see with people who get depressed is that they can get a little disconnected. They don't feel real emotionally connected to other people, okay? Let me tell you why that can spell trouble. For some reason, God made us to where our hearts only thrive when they are known and in relationship to other people. Don't ask me why he did that. He just did. All right? And parts of us that aren't known by other people tend to get malnourished and get sicker. It's kind of like a plant if you put it in a closet. It doesn't get sun. It doesn't get light. It doesn't get Miracle-Gro. What's going to happen? It's going to start to wither. All right? So for people, the sun, water, and Miracle-Gro for people is relationship with others. If I am living connected with you, I will thrive. Parts of me that aren't known by another person will get worse. Okay? I didn't make this up. I'm just reporting the news. It's how we work. That's why there's so many each others in the New Testament. That's why fellowship is a means of grace in the church, like worship and sacraments. It is a way God helps us to grow, right? And here's the point. Parts of us or hearts or individuals who live disconnected from other people tend to wither like that plant. And those parts get disconnected, and that creates symptoms, depression being one of them. With me? So there's a huge correlation between connection or disconnection with other people and depression. What else can drive us into depression? Shame is one I see a ton. Shame isn't the same as guilt. Guilt says I did something bad and I feel bad about it. Good, all right? Here's what shame says. You're worse than anybody. If people really knew you, oh my gosh, they would scorn you. Nobody else would do that. You feel that humiliation? You feel that thing that just makes you want to cringe and go away? You feel that? Now, as you know, since all of us feel that at some point, that kind of shame can very quickly and very easily sends you to the no-no chair of disconnection, okay? I'm not going to let anybody know me. They'll scorn me, you know? Just that self-condemnation. So I'll take those parts of me that are bad, or those secrets, or myself, and I will do what with them? Hide them, disconnect them, throw the breaker switch, presto, we're back to depression, all right? These are just some features that then work into that software. You getting where I'm going? By the way, hear all the self-hatred and that shamey stuff? You know, you're so horrible. You hear the self-hatred in that? That's where people get that cliche of depression is anger turned inward. And you can see how, regarding the shame aspect of depression, that would make sense. I mean, you know, it is. So shame is a real self-despising. I mean, who wouldn't want to disconnect? All right, there's some other mechanisms as well here that work in a depression. Most of them have to do with that software I was talking about how our character structure works. That gets real complicated. Let's just stick with these three for now. So what's the answer? How do we get unstuck? Is there any hope here? Well, yeah. To deal with depression, obviously, we're going to have to throw that breaker switch back on, right? Now, I don't know about you, but I ain't going to do that. I just got rid of that stuff. Thank you very much, you know. So what's the solution? What gets us out of that dilemma that I was talking about? Well, remember what I said about the way that God nourishes us, how He made our hearts to function, through relationship with Him and His people, okay? Well, the only thing that gets us out of depression, out of that disconnection that drives it, you with me here? The only thing that gets us out of depression is some kind of reconnection. All right? The only thing that gets us out of depression is going to be getting into relationship. God's grace and God's love manifested through His people. See, in some way I do not understand, and I should understand it because it is my job, but I don't understand how my cell phone works either, and I use it, all right? Some reason, some way God, I don't understand. God made us to where if we have the eyes and the hearts of His people, of someone else, as I start to address my pain or address my depression, the pain that we could not face earlier, remember the one that I could not stand, or that shame that said I was that unlovable, with someone else's eyes, somehow, what I see over and over again is that pain somehow becomes more manageable. And my options are no longer just to cut it off or to die from the pain. Because with someone else, I can face the hurt that I couldn't face before. Okay? Pain alone is twice as bad. Pain with someone is half as bad. There's your bumper sticker. In other words, the cure to depression, what breaks the impossible tie, is that if you have someone with you, y'all can face the unfaceable and you can cut the breakers back on. God created us to heal with other people. Other people can help us make sense of and tolerate, metabolize, and engage that emotion that I couldn't face. Other people are another set of eyes to help me clarify the distortions or the injuries or the deficits in that software, my grid for how I make sense of relationships. Other people are new experience in relationship for building new software. This is a whole nother, this is a conference, not a talk. Bottom line, though, for those of you who struggle with depression, for those of us who have struggled with depression, there's a solution. There's hope. God has thought about this already. I do it all the time. All right? Seeing a young guy right now, I've been seeing him about a month. He's in his mid-20s, and he came in saying he'd been depressed as long as he can remember, and doesn't know why. That's always the case. It's always a mystery at first. Doc, I'm depressed. I don't know why. All right? So, we talked about his life, and about second session, he started talking about how lonely he is as a young adult, how much he misses his family, how close they used to be, and that's gone. And as he starts talking about this, he starts to cry. Now, this is the first emotion I've seen from him since he set foot in my office. So I'm like, whoa. And I'm like, dude, right there, stay with that. Let's learn from that. We need to see what that has to teach us. Stay with that emotion. Let's learn. I'm going to listen to this. But about 15 seconds later, he cuts it off. Boom. He's drying his eyes. He's moving on. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. This is the first thing I've seen you feel. And it was like, boom, boom, hit and run, ring and run. It's gone. What happened? And he said, well, I just feel like I need to get a grip. You know, I mean, just need to move on. Sad about my family. Yeah, but I mean, come on. Get over it. And what was happening in his heart, do you hear it, junior psychologist? He was never letting himself actually feel and engage a feeling from beginning to end in a healthy way. When he started to feel something, he would just shut it off. The emotions didn't get to flow into his life and get metabolized and touched by relationship and love and get healed and move on out. He would log jam them up at the end. If he felt pain, he'd cut it off. If he felt sad, cut it off. Now, as I've been coaching him to actually stay with the feeling and me stay with him, which makes the feeling tolerable so he can stay with it, he's actually lifting out of his depression already. It's kind of cool. You need another human to do that. All right? Here's another one. Middle-aged woman who's been depressed for a significant amount of time. Again, it's a mystery. But what we learned as we got to know her is it became really evident to me that she is sort of the fixer and the savior of everybody in her life. Like, her husband has a problem, she fixes it. Her grown children have a problem, she fixes it. Her friends have a problem, she's making homemade chicken soup, you know? You single guys out there are like, she have a sister? You know? she don't need harmony? Anyway, what she learned early on in her software, her little grid for making sense of the universe, is that it's not okay to take care of yourself. You are here to take care of other people. Your job is to be strong and they all be weak and you just take care of them, okay? And that you're bad or you're selfish, you should feel shame, if you have any stewardship, is God's word, of your own needs, okay? So what she do? Those parts are bad, they're not any good, they make her feel bad, she cuts them off. I'm not somebody who needs anything. So she doesn't get tired, she doesn't get overwhelmed, she doesn't need anything, she just gets depressed, all right? Because she's running on no gas emotionally. She's a plant in a closet. All right? So, as we've learned to help her have some permission to need something herself, her depression is lifted. All right? This ain't rocket surgery. All right? Now, medication can certainly be a part of this process. Depression throws your neurotransmitters into Neptune. So I think meds are great at giving us a leg up toward fighting back. Now, John's opinion after doing this for 35 years is they are not the cure. The heart is the cure. We are hearts, and depression is a heart issue. Rarely see something that you could call chemical imbalance, all right? Your heart throws your brain into chemical imbalance. But meds are great in the meantime. I call meds are like crutches while your leg's broken, all right? The crutches aren't going to heal your leg, but they're going to help you get around while you and I do the work, all right, of your heart. We can talk about that more in Q&A if you want. All right, so depression is not the same as being sad. It's certainly not the same as being, you know, sulky or pouty. It's some kind of disconnection from pain we can't face or shame that isolates us, like Adam and Eve running from God. and we can get reconnected. All right? God is good. Now, number three, what can we be giving each other? How can we be a community in which we are less fertile soil for this kind of thing to take place? Now, I hope as you've been listening, you see how important this segment of the talk is. Because if the problem is disconnection and the solution is reconnection, how important is it for how we connect, how we relate to one another? All right? Relationship between humans has been really overlooked in the church since the Industrial Revolution. God manifests His love and His grace to us two ways. Two. Both directly through Himself. Yes, me and God, that's a good thing. And He says, I'm also going to manifest it through my people as manifold stewards of the grace of God. God who comforts the depressed sent Titus to us. In other words, God is a mediator. He uses mediators all the time. And if we just kind of want to go into your closet with you and God, you're going to miss out on a primary way in which God heals His people. I believe that godly, powerful, truthful, safe, loving relationship is the most powerful non-supernatural means of change that we have. That's why it's one of the means of grace. All right? And that's all therapy is systematized relationship, strategic fellowship. People don't get better in therapy because of the amazing wisdom of Dr. John L. Cox, okay? Well, maybe it's a little bit. They get better because you bring hearts that are in isolation into connection and they get better. God made that up. I don't even understand how it works all the time. So you get in wise, loving, small groups. You have safe friends where you've decided together, hey, man, let's be a part of each other's life and, like, be telling some truth, telling some grace, bringing some love, bringing some presence and healing. You want to do that? That'd be great. I get this week. You know, you be having meaningful, powerful interactions with your pastors, doing therapy, whatever. What I've found is you bring your heart to relationship, and I'm amazed at the transformation that can take place, okay? So, fellowship's not free time between Sunday school and church. A little fellowship time, you know? Fellowship is doing the each other's in the New Testament, all right? We really can be healing at that level. So, how can we be better at that? I'm going to give you some thoughts. Number one, I'm not telling you how to fix full-on clinical depression, you know? Leave that to me. You know those commercials, professional driver on closed course, do not attempt? Gotcha. All right. But with everybody else, by the way, therapy, don't reserve it for, I don't know who your good therapists are around Montgomery, but don't reserve it for the, oh my gosh, it's the end of the road, let's try therapy, right? People think it's just for, you know, hard cases. Most of my clients are like us. Okay? Everybody's got a glitch. This is a systematized form of using God's wisdom to help you grow. Okay? Don't reserve it for the, you know, the desperate case. I'm amazed at what it can do. But anyway, how can you as lay people, how can we as individuals be becoming more of an unfertile ground for depression, a more life-giving place? Number one, let's learn to be freer from judgment. I want in the front of our brains to be a consciousness of living as a community of people who send out the vibe that says, you know what, if I see your fallenness and I see your pain and I see your sin, I will not condemn you. I will not be thinking, man, I wouldn't have done that. Wouldn't have told that, brother. Can our hearts live in such a way that says, if you tell me your struggle, you'll experience a recognition from me in thought and deed and attitude of, man, are we in the same boat? I mean, my fruit might not be your fruit, but my fruit's just as stinky, I promise. Face it, every one of us has at least one, and I'm being generous, area of our lives that you cannot control. You cannot willpower it. It's gotcha. If you do not know what yours is, put that on your to-do list. Actually, here's a better idea. Ask your spouse after church. I'm sure they'll be glad to get you started on that one. Honey, is there one thing in my life I don't, you know... No, baby. So can we be filled with the grace that, you know, invites the broken? Because we're broken too, all right? Number two, can we keep confidence? Break it down to brass tacks. One of the reasons I'm not going to tell you about my heart is because I don't want it all around the country club and the carpool line tomorrow. Thank you very much. All right? In other words, I'm going to go, I'm fine. How about y'all? How's your mama now? How about that Crimson Tide? Though the dogs did scare them, please say yes. Just for a little bit, you guys were scared. Were they scared? Admit it. Yeah, okay. But think about it. Southern culture, you know, it's deeply rooted in our Southern culture to talk about people. It's what we do. You know, like tailgating and mama's pecan pie. It's what we do. All right? But do you ever wonder why gossip is listed in the New Testament with all those, you know, awful sins? I always love, like, Romans 1. And Paul's, like, talking about with unrighteousness and wickedness and greed and evil, full of envy and murder and strife and deceit and malice. They are gossips. And slanderers and murderers and haters of God and inventors of all evil. And it's like, whoa, my supper club made it into the iniquity hall of fame. You know, this is, wow. You know? Now, why is that? Why is gossip included in the pantheon of the dark side? Well, I'll tell you why. Think about what we've been saying. It's so destructive because gossip makes it unsafe for me to share my heart. So I will go back alone. And where is it that our hearts will never, ever, 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 ever get better? In the closet. Alone. So gossip is included with all those awful sins because gossip will keep me from telling you about me, which condemns me to isolation and therefore condemns me to never heal and grow. What could be a worse sin? Our only hope is to be a community in which our hearts are open to one another and do not tell. Otherwise, we become a community in which people in their hearts live in hiding until the scandal breaks. And we go, oh, my gosh, I can't believe about so-and-so. And so-and-so would like to say, well, you know what? If you had been a safer place 2 years ago, I would have told you that I was doing this, and maybe you could have helped me. And then maybe you would have believed. Can we keep confidence? Can we be a place where it's safe? Not even telling your spouse. I don't know how spouses get at the loophole. You know, you tell somebody something in confidence, like, well, I can tell you you're my spouse. No, you can't. If I tell you something about my heart and you want to tell your spouse, then you've got to come back to me and go, hey, John, you know that really graphic sin you have that you told me about? Can I tell Susie Q over here about it? I'm like, no. No. You can't tell your spouse. So regarding healing, nobody's going to tell the truth unless they know the truth stops with you. We're all too scared to be open because it's not safe. That's why they invented therapy. All right? As we become safer communities, you can put me out of business. That's great. I like my restaurant. I like cooking. All right? And I'll be part of a loving community. So, safety from shame, safety from having my confidence violated. Thirdly, when you're interacting with people who are struggling, be careful about advising. Okay? Someone brings their heart to us, be careful about trying to fix it. You know, quick solutions, Bible verses, whatever like that. And I know this is counterintuitive. Some of y'all are thinking, well, I don't get it. Somebody's telling me about their problems or they don't want advice on how to fix it. You know, help me out here, okay? Well, I'll tell you why this is not the best way to start. Remember the problem. The problem is that these parts of our hearts are what? Disconnected. These parts of our hearts are alone. These parts of our heart are in hiding. So the first thing they need is not advice. They need to be not alone. Okay? Just for somebody to get it. Just for somebody to hear you. All right? Now, the second thing they might need is some advice. All right? I'll work with you. All right? But the first thing needs to be understood and be heard and understood in their heart. Frankly, something about that is more healing than you can even imagine. Besides, advice kind of implies this problem is so simple that just a few easy pointers can help you out of this problem. Really? Okay? I've been doing this for 35 years, and I haven't found a problem that simple. You know, actually, after 35 years, after about 20 minutes, I pretty much know what somebody needs to do. They come to my office and start talking to me after about 20 minutes. I know what this person needs. And then after 40 minutes, I realized I was completely wrong. Okay? I still do that. All right? It's not simple. So a loving community will listen to Job's advice to his counselors. Oh, that your wisdom would be silence. All right? So we listen, we hear them, we love them, and we do what I call being lovingly with. All right? What does that mean? Well, think about it. With, I think, do a word study on this. With is God's favorite preposition. He uses it all through the Bible. Go look it up. Walk through the valley of the shadow of death. I'll fear no evil. Why? Because you're going to make it all better. No, because you'll be with me. Emmanuel, God with us. Lo, I'll be with you always, even until the end of the age. With. Why is God so into this? Because with is what we need. It's not good for the man to be alone. All right? And that means with repentant strugglers, we don't fix, we don't minimize, we don't preach, unless it's Sunday morning. We listen. We give them our eyes. We give them our hearts. We try it on. We say, man, I don't even know what to say. I mean, you wake up every morning and wonder, when's this nightmare going to be over? Thank you for telling me. I will walk with you through this. I love you. And I don't know any answers, but I want to be at your side. You hear that? People so rarely get the gift of someone just being with them. And you may say, what does that do? What's that going to change? Well, the only thing it's going to change is their hearts. And that's where the pain is. Thank you very much. A friend of mine's mother was dying in the hospital a few years back. And I just went up to the hospital and sat in the hall with him. Hours. We just sat in the dark hall of the hospital. And he told me later on, he said, that was the greatest gift anybody gave him. I don't think we said anything. We just sat there. Somebody with you. Okay? So don't ever underestimate with. Do you know why you don't know what to say at a funeral? Because there's nothing to say at a funeral. Be with them. With is everybody's love language. All right, now in the room, in the context of all that, there's some room to give some people some truth. Okay? This isn't just a love fest. It's legit to say, hey, you know, you want to look some maybe at some of the ways you might be maintaining your pain. I don't know. You ready for that yet? Or I know that, you know, you've learned that to have that kind of cynical certainty that people are going to let you down. You want to maybe reflect some on how that might be keeping you alone? Okay? Some truth here? So you advisors, here's your big chance. Okay? But look how far down the line this is. Look how late this is in the process. With unrepentant, destructive people, by the way, sometimes we need to lead with truth. Okay? That's another show. But with the broken, with the strugglers, once they're held in love, there's some room for truth. And we have the two dynamics of all growth, love and limits, peace and righteousness. And we have grace and truth. All right? God is always dancing in those. And those are always the currency of growth. Love and limits, grace and truth in the context of relationship is sort of the triad that makes us grow. All right. John's whirlwind tour. All right. I'm just going to stop there and open it up to questions.
You want to check your phone?
Yep. I want to know if there's anybody publicly first, though. Nothing yet.
Nothing yet.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not just necessarily sadness or necessarily down, but it can also be depression.
Yes, but with a y'all hear a question? I was saying, you know, Debbie down or negative is not the same as being depressed, almost as if there was a distinction, either or. And she makes a great point that you could be a Debbie downer and still be depressed, okay? Your intervention would be a little different. And I don't know what it is, but you can feel the difference. Usually the negative Debbie Downer people are more passive in the sense of they want to talk a lot about their misery, but they don't really want to engage in the process of figuring out and getting out of it. So if somebody who's just broken and really wants to work, I'm going to lead with real understanding. I want to really get to the bottom of your pain. Let's walk into it together. With someone who's more negative victim-y, I want to say, you know, you've talked a lot with me. We've gone a lot of times to the depth of your pain. And yet I don't have a real sense that you're wanting to go to war against it. Do you want to go to war against it? And what you usually find is why they're passive. What you usually find is why they're just living in victimhood. The victimhood has to get addressed before the depression happens. Good.
Hey, John, we have one over here.
All right. Maybe another conference. The difference between anxiety and depression, and is that another conference?
The difference between anxiety and depression in terms of how they subjectively feel or how they work. Okay. The difference between anxiety and depression is usually depression is a little deader in the sense of depression. Remember, is you throw the breaker switch. I don't really feel anything. Okay? It's like there's an emptiness, a darkness, a hole. Anxiety is going to be a little more vigilant. With anxiety, I'm a little more of a warrior. With anxiety, I'm like going, oh, it's getting cloudy outside, and I got a long drive back to Jackson this afternoon. I mean, what if something goes wrong with my car, and I'm stewing, all right? With depression, I'm more likely going like, all right, well, bye, y'all. Okay? I'm going to be more shut down, all right? Now, to keep us balanced, you can have anxiety and depression, a little mixture, okay? And in fact, you medicate them similarly. I think good medication for anxiety is you close your eyes and pretend it's depression and give them Lexapro, and it usually medicates the anxiety. So they work on common themes. Anxiety usually has a real serious relationship to disconnection as well, though. Depression and anxiety are both, in a lot of ways, based on disconnection. If I'm not living my life grounded in love, I will start to ground it in something else. And for a lot of people, they will start to ground it in circumstances. In other words, I'm not safe because you are my body of Christ and I'm loved. And here's my family and here's my friends and I'm loved. And that's my grounding and God is my one. If I don't have that, what I'm going to start doing is loading up other things in my life to make me feel safe. Like my money's okay. Okay. You know, my house is okay. Well, did I lock it up? And I'll start to have a lot of circumstantial vulnerability because of that. So again, the solution to anxiety is very often to help somebody get connected to a relationship. Once I get more connected to love, then the power of the circumstances drops a lot. Interesting question. Thank you.
Do you find that people have a lot of fear about medication?
That's an interesting question. Yes. Let me put it this way. Many people do have fear about medication, and here's some reasons why. Number one, people hear things like, ooh, you can get addicted to it. And that's not true because all it does is rebalance your serotonin. In other words, being depressed is sort of like getting so overdrawn on your credit card that you can't even pay off the interest balance every month. And medication's kind of like with serotonin. And medication's kind of like your rich Uncle Bob paying down the principal so that you can kind of get caught up. So it's not really an addictive thing. Some people are worried about it because of the stigma. But people get worried about everything because of stigma. What are other reasons people get afraid of it? Can y'all think of any? Body of Christ?
It means you don't trust God.
Ah, right, yeah. Well, you know, One of my favorite commandments from God was one of his first, and that's when he looked at Adam and he said, I want you to go name the animals. I made this place, you're running it. I want you to master it. The first profession in the world was zoology. Okay? In other words, Adam had to sit back and go, giraffe. That's what I go with. You know, and we as really holy Christians think he should have gone, Father, I will name it what you want. And God's like, no, get out there and learn it. Get out there and do it. Master this world. So God calls us to master the world in therapy and in medication and in resources about how we can grow. So in no way does that contradict anything about God's trusting him. He's called us to look for resources in the world, his world, and use those. Is there more to your question, though? Or just wondering why people get anxiety about it? Here's another one. People get afraid they'll be on it the rest of their lives. Okay? And that is often true. That's why I made that distinction that I believe, as C.S. Lewis said, you don't have a soul. You are a soul that lives in a body. Okay? People go, well, I don't know, is it the medicine, the biochemistry gets you depressed, or your depression gets you biochemistry? in my experience, it's overwhelmingly that my heart creates the brain issue. All right? So the goal is, let's help the brain issue, the medicine, balance you a little more, but we need to work on the heart issue. So I have these people like, yeah, my mom saw a psychiatrist for 87 years. I'm like, no way. You know, I want you off this in 9 months. You know, this is just going to help give you a leg up.
Yes.
If I tell myself that I'm never depressed, am I just being untruthful?
If I tell myself I'm never depressed, am I, well, are you ever depressed? I believe you. Am I a believer? I met her earlier. I believe her. I tell you, if you tell yourself you're not fallen or broken or a struggler or a sinner in any way, that'd be self-deception. But or sad. Yeah, sadness would be a healthy thing, right? That's why I kept saying this will put us into symptoms, one of which is depression, because all of us have different expressions of it. We could do just the same talk on compulsive behaviors, right, and what drives that. But some people just never get depressed. Some people don't have much pathology, but they will feel sad, or they'll feel vulnerable, or they'll feel guilty before God, or whatever. So, yeah. Good questions, y'all. Thank you.
Don't move a finger, I'll see it.
Mine was related to the medication question.
Yes.
A lot of people, I've heard about side effects of the medications.
Yes.
In some cases, it says can cause more depression. Is that true? Because I know that I was talking to one mom, and she was paranoid about her son starting medication because of the side effects.
Yeah. Well, here's my rule of thumb. Number one, I don't recommend anybody get medication. If you're in therapy with a good therapist, I don't recommend you do medication unless you really need it. In other words, if it's impairing your functioning. Now, when people's lives really get disrupted by the depression, cool, I'm good with medicine. But here's the problem. The state of the art in psychiatry that I have experienced in my life regarding antidepressants is, let's try on Zoloft, you know? And for that, you pay like $600. I'm like, dude, I could do that. You know, in other words, it's a crapshoot. They're like, well, try some Zoloft. And if you do and you have side effects, then we'll change it. And unfortunately, that's the case. Like, nobody knows, given your depression, if you're going to respond better to Cymbalta or Lexapro or Zoloft or what. So we try one. And what I tell people is try it. Get your psychiatrist or your internist to give you a sample so you don't just spend a lot of money on it. Go home, take it for a few days. And if it makes you feel weird or more depressed, which I guess it could, or makes you anxious, or keeps you from sleeping, or gain weight, or loss of interest sexually, or whatever, change it. Or start taking it a different time of day. But be in dialogue with that physician and monitor it. So there's this little process of picking an antidepressant, trying it out, tweaking it, changing it, maybe starting a different one. And you need a doctor who can help you actually walk that little dance. If somebody's going to say, yeah, I'll see you in a month, go see somebody else. All right. So if it does increase your depression, which is a rare side effect. I hear more that increases anxiety or weight gain, and of course that makes ladies depressed. that's the problem. Yeah. Then you need to sort of switch it and tweak it.
Yeah. All right. Let's do one last one quickly.
All right. Good.
I wondered if you what your thoughts were on exercise helping toward, you know, if you know you're prone to depression, if exercise can help.
Yes, I would put that as you have probably deducted from meeting me. I think that the heart is the source of everything. And our hearts are very related to our character and our emotion and our relationship. And I think that ultimately is what drives our psychological, emotional, spiritual problems. So if you're depressed and you want to address that, what I would rather you do is put an enormous amount of energy into understanding what your heart needs. Now, your heart lives in a body now, and when you die, it'll temporarily not live in a body, and then once again, it'll live in a body again. You're created to live in a physical body. So if there's things you can do with your body, like exercise or medication, that can help lift those chemicals, cool, but do not do it at the expense of the heart. Okay? I like y'all. Y'all have me back and do a conference sometime. I like y'all. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
thank you. I'm going to pray. But first, I hope you noticed that when he was answering questions, what did he come and do? He came to be with you and in your midst. And that's because he knows a great one who in all of our struggles comes and is with us. Just like, so thank you for that, bringing that to us. Let me pray. Lord, thank you for all of your kindnesses to us. Thank you for the wisdom and the teaching that we've received here. Would you increasingly make us a people who are walking and trafficking in the sadness of this life and the hope that is in the gospel and the strength that is in relationships. And so we thank you for today and ask that you would go forward with us. And we ask this in Christ's name. Amen.